Vacations are always good. Sometimes they're even great. And Celebrity Cruises is about to ruin all of that. Because once you explore with us, you'll never want a vacation any other way. And with new quick Caribbean escapes, you'll never want a weekend any other way either. Celebrity Cruises. Nothing comes close. Visit celebrity.com, call 1-800-CELEBRITY, or contact your travel advisor. Ships Registry, Malta and Ecuador.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man who knows that the best bar in the 614 is behind home plate at Huntington Park. Here is the captain.
Bada, 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 swing, bada. It's good to be seen and good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
Once again, we are featuring Huggins Hefeweizen by the good folks over at Hell and Blazes down in Florida. This is a Bavarian staple that comes with a highly carbonated, yeast-forward medium body and an intense aromatics of banana and clove, garage grade, 3.5 bottle caps out of 5. And how about a big shout out to our friend Zach Ackvan in Cave Spring, Georgia. And here's a shout out to Mike Roer from Ohio, but living it up in Mililani, Hawaii. Thanks to everyone for contributing to this week's beer fund.
Aloha. Yeah, BWERUN, beer run. You need some bonus content? Of course you do. Go over to Patreon and sign up for True Crime Garage bonus content. Or if you're listening on the Apple Podcast app, just hit subscribe. Can't thank you enough for supporting this little tiny garage ship. Onwards and upwards. That's enough of the business.
All right, everybody, gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime. With the Florida vampire John Brennan Crutchley locked up and held behind bars, he is now starting his 25-year sentence, as we have discussed. So with him locked away, what I'd like to do now is talk about and see if we can find some other victims of John Crutchley. Because remember, we have serial killer FBI agent expert Robert Ressler, who takes a quick look at this scenario. He reviews all of the crime scene photos, reviews all the evidence, speaks with detectives, talks with the judge and the prosecutor, and he says, I believe, and my expert opinion is this, I believe this guy has killed before, and I believe that he would do it again.
Right.
So let's cross-reference some of the potential other victims of John Crutchley's here with maybe even using his timeline a little to see if anything shakes loose. And keep in mind that there were 6 unidentified female murder victims that were found between January 1st, 1985 and December 31st, 1985, found all within a 6-mile radius of John Crutchley's home. So the Florida vampire was in jail. He was in a jail cell for only 10 of the 365 days of that year. Florida law enforcement officials have placed the number of possible Crutchley victims quite high. So some of them are saying the number may be as high as 32 victims.
Wow.
12 in Brevard County, where he lived, Brevard County, Florida, and 20 potential victims out of state, saying wherever Crutchley lived and worked, they have found bodies that fit what serial killer experts say would fit the victimology that he desired.
Mm-hmm.
But what we know, us garage guys know, is that Crutchley has never been charged in a single murder. Now, the most conservative investigators say he killed at least 4 women. Others say the number of possible homicide victims could be more than 24. The victims are all thought to be young women slain during violent sexual encounters with John Crutchley. Detectives suspect him of kidnapping transient and hitchhikers to reach his, quote, ultimate dream. This was John Brennan Crutchley's expression for sex ending in death. There was a graphic in the Florida Today newspaper back in the day showing the East Coast of the United States and possible John Crutchley victims. We said earlier, Florida police and outside agencies thought the number could be as high as 32. This graphic lists 26 possible Crutchley victims. So we'll start at the top of this graphic, and it reads, Crutchley's path, John Crutchley's possible victims from Fairfax timeline listed by name and date of death, disappearance, or discovery of the remains. And the first location that they point to is Pennsylvania, and the victim here is unidentified with no date given. Now, once we get to Maryland, which is next in line on this list, we have multiple victims here. I believe it's 11 that is listed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So we have 11 victims here that are listed.
Wow, he can count.
Yeah. As slow as that was a man counting, a grown man counting.
Wow. We're putting out a great podcast.
I want to, yeah. Next week we'll do the alphabet. I want to skip over Maryland. Let's circle back to Maryland here. Okay. So Pennsylvania, the victim that they think could be linked to Crutchley is unidentified. There's no date given. So there's nothing really to discuss there. We can't sort out if we think he is the likely perpetrator if we don't know the victim's name nor the date of any of the information. So next we have Virginia. Deborah Fitzjohn was killed in January of 1977. And we'll go through her case in depth before we wrap up this week. But also in Virginia, we have two other Virginia homicides listed on this graphic here, referred to as Norfolk 1 and Norfolk 2.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know here in the garage that those two Norfolk victims are known to be Pamela Ann Kimbrough, a 23-year-old Navy messenger, and Carol Ann Molnar, a 21-year-old Navy clerk. Both women were slain at the Norfolk Naval Air Station in 1982 and then in 1983. Those are the two cases that we discussed last week. John Brennan Crutchley was a suspect in both of those murders, but not until after he was arrested in Florida in 1985. Navy detectives identified Crutchley as a suspect in 1987, when investigators placed him in the area at the time of the women's deaths. So they state that they believe that he was living and working in the area from approximately 1979 to 1983. Remember, we know that he took the job in June of 1983. So he would have been present if his work history is the determining factor on when he moved from Virginia to, or the Virginia area to Florida.
Right.
Then he would have been in Virginia during the time that both of these murders were committed. Now, while there, he worked as a defense contractor for TRW, holding a top secret security clearance that gave him access to restricted military bases, including the Norfolk Naval Air Station. But if you listen to last week's episodes, you already know that we know that he did not kill Pamela and Kimbrough.
Right. Because DNA proved that it was somebody else.
Exactly.
But we have him being arrested and we have his DNA, so we should be able to test that in the other crime.
I'm hoping that they have his DNA. Remember, he goes to prison in 1985.
Yeah.
And every state is different, but in Ohio, we didn't start collecting DNA from felons until 2010.
It wouldn't be that hard to send somebody in and say, hey, suck my blood, and then get his DNA. Boom. Match.
Now, besides those Virginia slayings, sheriff's detectives were actively investigating Crutchley in several cases in Brevard County. One is Patty Valensky, 29 years old, a Titusville woman who was last seen hitchhiking in Mims, Florida, on March 15th, 1985. Remember, she's the one that they find her ID in pictures of her son in his office.
Yeah, she's most likely a victim.
The other one that they were openly and actively investigating Crutchley for was a woman named Kimberly Ann Walker, who was 21 years old. She was from Vero Beach, whose bones were found near US 1 in Malabar, January 28, 1985. And then there's another woman who was unidentified. Her skeletal remains were found in the same location that Kimberly Ann Walker's remains were found.
It becomes almost a easier victim in the sense of some of these hitchhikers are living a nomadic life. So their family, especially at that time period, because it's just harder to communicate or stay in constant communication with your loved ones if they're traveling or living that nomadic life. So I think that's why you see these serial killers try to prey on these types of victims.
That is exactly right there, Captain. Now, that victim list, that graphic, that list was compiled in 1989 by task force member. There was a John Crutchley task force that was assembled. And this was one of the members of the task force. His name is Andy Casey.
I think they called their research the Vampire Diaries.
He compiled this list along with several other police agencies. So they listed 26 possible Crutchley victims there. But years later, we're going to get some clarification on some of those unsolved murders that were listed. So although Crutchley long has been a suspect in many of the Florida and Virginia cases, the Maryland slayings, the experts later would say, don't seem to fit the pattern. So, and we see this from time to time, right? When a unknown serial killer is then identified, located, and arrested, and now all of a sudden everybody's kind of shuffling and scurrying about trying to connect every unsolved homicide to this person in the area. And this guy moved around to several different areas. So we're looking basically up and down the whole East Coast. What we get, Captain, is Montgomery County, Maryland police. This is a Washington suburb. They go on record saying that they strongly doubt that Crutchley was involved in five of the deaths that were listed on that timeline. They refer to that victim list as the Fairfax timeline.
Right.
Just in case you hear me say that term. According to John Crutchley's attorney, he says that police theorize that Crutchley killed young women that he picked up hitchhiking by draining their blood after raping them and then dismembering them. The problem with some of these victims on the Maryland thing, they don't really fit the victimology at all. So one of them was the 1982 Maryland victim named Keese Milford. Well, this was actually a 67-year-old man killed by a gunshot wound to the stomach. So while they're putting together this list years later, they're going, well, we got to kind of look at this differently. A lot of these names, we understand that you put this together as a matter of haste, but let's let cooler heads prevail here.
Right.
And really analyze these and see what we put the percentage, the likelihood that he killed these. Now, the authorities in Maryland go on to explain We don't even know how some of these names got onto your Fairfax timeline list, because three of the Maryland victims were actually killed months after Crutchley had moved out of the area. So they're saying one doesn't fit the victimology. Three, he would have had to drive back home months after he had already moved down to Florida to have killed these three women. And then in the long run, let's fast forward to a couple more years, because that list was put together in, what did we say, 89?
Yeah, but that's not out of the realm of possibility, though, right?
It's not, but we also don't know what other information they have, right? So, like for example, we know that even though she's not identified by name on here, we know one of these potential Crutchley victims is Pamela Ann Kimbrough. But we now know by science, and because somebody else is locked up for life, that he did not kill her.
Right.
And so what I think that we should do is point out here that there's a likelihood that they have information to suggest that he was not involved. Like, one list, if you look at potential Crutchley victims, not only includes Pamela Ann Kimbrough, but it also includes the Lyon sisters, who we now know were killed by somebody else. So a lot of these lists, I believe, were put together in a rather quick fashion, and they didn't have time to really sort it out.
Mm-hmm.
So what we get here, Captain, is Montgomery County, Maryland police say years later, Crutchley has been ruled out as a suspect in all of the listed deaths in that state. Victims are listed by name and date of death unless noted otherwise on that list. And although the timeline lists 11. So let's go ahead and get rid of all those Maryland murders of the 26 that they suspected, of 26 total throughout different states.
Right.
We can now remove 11 of those. So now we're down to, we're not only counting on the show. Guess what? We're going to do a little bit of math for you too.
Oh, great!
It's a show where you get everything. It just really is. And I, you know what? I listened to a portion of last week's show. Math not so great for me sometimes. Not no, so great.
Or pronouncing city names.
Right, there we go.
Or no offense, but last week I think you called them Navy ladies, and I so badly just wanted to say they're
sailors.
They are sailors. They are officers in the Navy. Let's have a little more respect for them.
Well, I was trying to call them. I was going out of my way to call them ladies because I had referred to them as sailors otherwise, you know, at other times. So
hey, my defense,
change it up
a bit. Look, I know you.
And lady is a term that you earn. Lady is a term that you earn.
Well, anyways, I know you better than most, and I know. Your respect for the victims is of the highest standard, and I have a lot of respect for you because of that.
Well, on that same list, the 26 that we're discussing, so push away 11 of them already. Now, that math would tell me 15 is what we're down to. And we get the Brevard County Sheriff Jake Miller, who says a couple years later that although this list includes 11 homicides from our county, he's telling us, we've reviewed the evidence. We know what we're looking at here. And Crutchley is really only a suspect in six of the cases. So now you can get rid of another five. So at best, if this list is accurate and is telling us that how many potential victims we have here, you can get rid of Pamela Ann Kimbrough. You can get rid of all the victims from Maryland, and you can reduce the number in Florida from 11 to 5. So that whittles down that 26 very quickly.
But I think some of it is when we're telling these stories or people are retelling the story, they start sensationalizing these killers. And at the end of the day, these guys are scumbag losers.
I think that it's human behavior. I think it's just natural, right? It's human behavior, because I think when you go, oh my word, this guy is capable, we're proof positive, we know for sure this guy is capable of doing something that many of us are not capable of, I think that you want to go, you know what, there can't be that many bad guys out there, there can't be many guys out there like this, he has to be responsible for a lot of this murder and mayhem. So what are they doing about it? You know, it's one thing to make a list. It's another thing to put it in the newspaper or talk about it on the news. But what are the authorities doing about it? Well, down in Florida, they were calling this John Brennan Crutchley case the never-ending investigation. That's because putting John Brennan Crutchley behind bars in 1986 didn't stop investigators in Brevard County and in the state of Virginia from attempting to find his other victims. They wanted to prove that he was, in fact, a killer. They wanted to lock him up for good, lock him up and throw away the key. And we already pointed out that Robert Ressler, an FBI expert on serial killers, who has consulted with authorities on the Crutchley case, he said he believed that this dude was a serial killer and probably had several victims and maybe even had them in different states. So they're running investigations on this guy periodically, Captain, from 1985, when he first pops onto their radar with that arrest in Florida, through 1996, on and off. And these investigations are continuing in Florida and in other states as well. Most of these investigative efforts, from my understanding, centered on hoping to locate the bodies of possible victims and finding trophies. This would be victims' belongings, such as identification cards and jewelry.
Right.
And they believe that that is the, remember what the one detective said, he probably got rid of a bunch of evidence, but for whatever reason, he could not get rid of that driver's license of his rape victim. And so they were hoping that he would have shown that in other cases with other victims. And remember, they found a lot of women's jewelry in the house. And who knows what he got rid of in that trash bag. Now, when they interview his wife says, no, that's all my jewelry. Well,
yeah, I don't. Yeah,
like I'd like to see receipts, lady.
Yeah, and this is, becomes a problem also with the investigation, because what do we know about the confirmed victim, right? The confirmed attack, the confirmed abduction, the confirmed rape. His family was gone. So if she was an actual decent human being, she could then work with law enforcement and say, hey, I can tell you the times that I was gone. I can tell you the times I went to visit people. And so those dates could correlate maybe better with some of these possible victims. Or, hey, I can tell you not only when I was gone, but I can give you some good indication of his travel habits and his whereabouts.
Well, during the course of this, these ongoing investigations, they search, because keep in mind, at least one of the victims, and I believe maybe in a couple of cases, they think that they are still looking for the remains. Mm-hmm. Because Patty Valinsky, they found her identification card. She's been missing. So they're hoping to find her. They have something directly tying Crutchley to her. They just need, sorry to be crude here, they just need to find her body.
Right.
So they're searching Malabar cemeteries. The yard of John Crutchley's Malabar home, remember we said it was 2.7 acres. That was the scene of at least four excavations. I think authorities thought that they would find her buried there. And then when they went back, even after these excavations, they kept going back and taking core samples throughout the yard to see if that they could hit on anything that could be either a body or find evidence that Crutchley may have buried.
Right.
The house was searched again with the permission of new owners after his wife and kid moved out. And they even punched holes in the walls so they could look inside the walls. A shed behind the house was demolished and the concrete pad was torn out. Cadaver dogs searched a shopping center on US 192 in Melbourne, where a former inmate said Crutchley had disposed of a body, but they didn't find anything. The detectives from Florida are on record saying that they had at one time at least 16 boxes of evidence. And some of that evidence included the hard drive from Crutchley's computer and dozens of computer discs and tapes. We also know that we have the detective on record stating that one mistake that he does know that they made is they did not collect his computer right away. keep in mind, it's 1985. Right. You go back that far, most people did not have a computer. I don't know that back then, a lot of detectives did not work on a computer either. And so they may not have just had that insight of, oh, this would be a valuable thing to collect and figure out how to go through it later. They did eventually collect it, Captain, but they didn't collect it then that night on the 22nd when they, or I should say the 23rd, because it was 2 a.m, when they made the arrest and searched his house the first time. And we do know that he got out for 4 weeks after posting bond. So he has a computer at his office as well. At some point, the Harris Corporation turns over his computer to the police. And so they're going through dozens of computer disks. Remember those things? And they're examining all of this. They say that detectives eventually found that there had been a bunch of files that were erased, and then some of the files that remained on these computers. So when we talk about this, Captain, I want to be clear. They don't detail enough the information for us to know what was found on his home computer versus what was found on his office computer. But we're talking in generalities right here. So between these two computers, they're saying we found files that had been erased. We're finding other files that remained, but they were coded. The FBI technicians believe that while they were not able to recover everything, they do believe that they recovered, quote, most of the data that was erased from the computer's hard drives.
Right.
Then in 1988, keep in mind, he's been locked up for 2 years now. The arrest happened in late 85. Two members of the Crutchley Task Force, they have NASA security specialists who helped to break the coded files. Detective Bob Lethereau says that he believed that it took 7 days with these guys going at it 24 hours a day to break these codes. But so this is like a roller coaster ride. Can you imagine like the hard work and effort that has to be put into this? And you're probably saying, we don't even know if we're going to be able to break these codes.
Right.
But then when you do break them, you're like, ah, got him. Oh, we got him. But unfortunately, what they learn is that the files only contain an assortment of text files and games, including a Dungeons and Dragons type game that Crutchley was designing. Police tried several times to interview Crutchley in prison. He denied them. So they decided to interview prison inmates that would know him to learn a little bit more about John Crutchley. The prison interviews, while not providing any new investigative leads, did shed some light on Crutchley's life behind bars. Although officials called Crutchley a hardworking model prisoner, the inmates claim that Crutchley was into Satanism and enjoyed reading books about gory murders and serial killers. While all of these investigations are going, many of which the police both in Florida and elsewhere were not so silent about there being rumor over the years that they were close to another plea deal with John Crutchley. This plea deal would have put him behind bars for the rest of his life, and it would have convicted him of several murders. It was almost the perfect crime. Everyone was distracted, their attention elsewhere. Stacks of cold hard cash sitting on the table unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal a pile of Monopoly money from the banker? Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out everyone's most devious selves. And Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic game that you can play throughout your day, anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties. Bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Download it now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Do you want to set your child up for success? Of course you do. That's why you need to check out IXL Learning today. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. It's powered by advanced algorithms. IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. There's one site for all kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids could use it at home on their computer or on an app on your phone or a tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything for you. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. I love recommending IXL Learning. Kids can learn at home or on the go. And all my friends and family that are using it absolutely love it because it's so easy to set up and so easy to use. And even the kids that I've recommended it to their parents have told me, hey, Captain, thank you. I was having problems in math and my parents couldn't help me, but IXL could. Do you want to get your kids back on track or do you just want to get your kids ahead? Do so with IXL Learning. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And True Crime Garage listeners get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/garage. Visit IXL.com/garage to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. Check out IXL.com/garage today.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. Factor's ready-to-eat meals are on the table in 2 minutes. Eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. They're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Day Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. I am always on the go. I'm rather busy. And grabbing a quick meal for me used to mean eating the bad stuff. But I've switched to Factor. Now I simply grab a Factor meal from my refrigerator, heat, and then I am enjoying a delicious meal in just 2 minutes. And it's not loaded with the bad stuff. Head to factormeals.com/truecrimegarage50 and use code truecrimegarage50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code truecrimegarage50 at factormeals.com/truecrimegarage50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
All right, we are back. Onwards and upwards. Cheers to you. And a quick reminder, this week on Off the Record, subscribe on Patreon or Apple. The Colonel gives the Captain the Men's Journal interview. So you don't want to miss that. So what we like to call fascinating stuff.
If everything goes according to plan, that will be what, Captain? 4 back-to-back episodes of Off the Record 4 weeks in a row.
Yeah, a little extra love.
A little extra love for the ones that we love so much.
Yes.
This plea bargain thing turns into a whole debacle. And I don't even know, Captain, if there's somebody to blame or if everybody tried their damnedest and it just kind of fell through.
Right.
So according to an attorney, this was Crutchley's defense attorney. It was openly discussed that a deal was in the workings that Crutchley would plead guilty to between 3 and 6 homicides And I believe all of them. Now, when we say 3 to 6, I don't know if that number changes or the statement changes, but the way that it's been reported is he was willing to plead guilty to 3 to up to 6 homicides in Brevard County, Florida. In return, what Crutchley wanted, it was to receive life in prison and not face the death penalty. He did not want to go to the electric chair. His defense attorney then later goes on record stating that, oh, this was rejected by the state. We were all prepared to plead guilty to this and give them answers in some of these unsolved homicides. And in some of the information states that he was willing to lead them to bodies or to lead them to where he had buried some bodies.
Right. Why do you think the state would turn down this deal?
I don't know. And that's why I say I don't know that there's any blame to give here, or because it doesn't make any sense to me. Because you have a defense attorney saying, yeah, we were willing to agree to this. You have the detective, at least one of them, who was in charge of many of these investigations, who was saying, we wanted to take that deal. And we had information backing up that he had committed some of those homicides. His defense attorney goes on record saying that the state is the one that denied it. And what we have here, though, we have the Brevard County prosecutor, and that's not his exact title, but his last name is Wolfinger, and Sheriff Jake Miller, excuse me. They said that there was never a formal offer to be accepted or rejected.
Hmm.
So while one side is saying one thing, they're not saying we didn't have those talks. They're not saying we didn't explore that. They're just saying there was never a formal offer for us to accept or to reject. And who knows? Maybe they were in talks and then Crutchley gets cold feet and says, nope, not going to do it. Changed my mind. Here's the problem, though.
Yeah.
We talk about this all the time. You love how I'm starting to say, here's the problem. Like we haven't gone through like dozen problems already.
The episode started off with some problems. You're not allowed to kidnap.
Exactly.
Assault and try to murder people. That's the first problem here.
Really, truly, the only problem, as far as this story is concerned, is John Brennan Crutchley, right?
Well, like, not only was he a vampire, but he was a dungeon master as well.
If he had never existed or never been who he was or the way he was, all these other problems, we would have never got to him. They would have never been creative. So, but here's the problem now for where we are in our timeline. And we talk about this, and I hate to repeat it, but it's, unfortunately, in most states, 25 years does not mean 25 years behind bars.
It's pathetic.
Now, thankfully here, we have the scenario where at least he's going to face 50 years of probation. Pretty much a lifetime of being on probation. But we get Robert...
Like, that's going to stop him from committing other murders.
We got Robert Ressler again, who estimated that the Florida vampire and convicted abductor and rapist John Crutchley would be released in 1998. Remember, he was sentenced in 1986. He's estimating this 1998 release based off of once you factor in time off for good behavior. Unfortunately, not only was Bob right that Crutchley would get out early,
oh God,
but he was off by 2 years. They're going to release him in 1996. And as the date got closer and closer, people, rightfully so, started to panic. And I'm talking about panic, not just at the disco. This is civilians and law enforcement as well. Yeah. Like everybody. So we have the whole state of Florida is like, oh, you're going to let this dude out? Well, where are you going to let him out at? Like, we don't want him here. You can't, like, there's sex offenders, and then there's this guy. Nope, nobody wants this guy in their community. Nobody believes the community as a collective. Nobody believes that this guy could be rehabilitated. He's something that we don't understand. We would should not understand.
Yeah.
And he's going to get out and he's going to continue to do whatever it is that he does. So rather than just sitting there on their hands and panicking, waiting for him to get out, we have law enforcement that are doing everything that they can to try to find the right amount of evidence to try him, to take him back to trial for one of these murders, and hoping to get him locked up for something else and for good before John Brennan Crutchley was released from a Florida prison. Now, there was a great article from the Associated Press, and I'll go through a little of it here, Captain. The convict known as the vampire rapist was released from prison and is suspected in the disappearance of at least three women in Florida and one in Fairfax County, Virginia, prosecutors said. John Crutchley, age 49, remember he was 39 when he was arrested. John Crutchley, age 49, served 10 years of a 25-year sentence for abducting, raping, and drinking the blood of a female hitchhiker in 1985. He was sent to a halfway house. So upon his release, he's sent to a halfway house. And think of this as like purgatory a little bit. This is while the authorities are trying to help him find a community that will accept him. I've seen this in a few cases. It's strange, but it does happen where when somebody is going to be paroled, a person of this level, a dangerous individual of this level, they actively have to find a community that's willing to accept him.
And if Florida don't want you, nobody wants you.
Well, usually what happens, the other case that I know that we've seen this in was Arthur Shawcross. He had murdered two children, and then they were going to let him out of prison up north. And what happened in that case is very similar to what's going to happen in this case. Usually what they find is that the smaller communities, no, you're not putting them here. It's usually a larger community that's kind of forced to accept them. And so you'll get a larger city that will accept them because they are used to more violent crimes. They are used to increased numbers of crimes. And they believe that that might be a safer scenario for everyone. It doesn't matter because he's getting out. He has to go somewhere. So even though he's denied any connection with any other murders, remember his former lawyer said that Crutchley was at one time willing to plead guilty from anywhere between 3 to 6 killings in return for life sentences, no death penalty. Prosecutors said there was never a firm offer and they didn't have corroborating evidence that they said they would need to accept the pleas. But police did find, they did have circumstantial evidence when they searched his desk at the Harris Corporation office where he worked. This is, remember, when they found the identification card belonging to Patty Valensky.
Right.
She's been missing in Florida since March of 1985. He not only lived there then, he's never been locked up for anything at this point. So police were also looking at links between John Crutchley and a woman named Debbie Fitzjohn in Fairfax, Virginia. So she was murdered, and we talked about her briefly already, but she was murdered in 1978. At the time, Debbie Fitzjohn was 25 years old. She was last seen when she was visiting John Crutchley's trailer on January 27th of that year. Her remains were found buried in some nearby woods months later. Her mom, giving an interview, says, quote, "My daughter went down to his trailer and she never came away again." She added that she couldn't understand how officials could set him free after only serving 10 years, saying, quote, "They're just going to let him out on the public. What the hell do they think he's going to do there?" They interviewed this potential victim, Debbie Fitzjohn, her father. And I really wanted to make sure, I have in my notes here, please make sure that you include this quote, because it's probably my favorite quote of the week when doing the research here. Was he says, Mr. Fitzjohn says that he also wonders who would possibly want to give John Crutchley a job or a place to live, adding, quote, you mark my word, it will happen again. I'm assuming mean kill or rape somebody else. He goes on to say, quote, send him up here. I'll hire him and I'll send him back down in a burying box. Now, people in Orlando, rightfully so, were upset to later learn that Crutchley was going to be released into their community. Orange County Sheriff Kevin Berry wasn't happy that Orlando was chosen after two other communities rejected Crutchley. So the sheriff writes a letter to the governor saying that he was outraged, quote, a violent sex offender is being released into my county and I found out about it on the radio, end quote. The mother of Crutchley's rape victim, our one truly known victim here, said that her daughter, this is 11 years later, she says that her daughter has never recovered from the attack. Quote, my daughter and I think he should have gotten life. He says he's a changed man, but I think he is a sick man, and I don't think he can ever change.
Yeah, I mean, if that was my daughter, I'd hunt down this son of a bitch and kill him myself.
The good news is nobody's going to have to go for that vigilante justice, because there's several different ways to tell the next part of this story. And I'm trying to think of the most polite and correct way, but I don't know that I'm capable.
Ah, fuck that.
Well, what happens here, Captain, is remember he goes to this halfway house. And we do know that John Crutchley likes marijuana. It was found in his home when he was arrested. We have him given statements saying that he smoked marijuana before he was in prison.
Marijuana.
At the halfway house, again, the story goes a few different ways. One telling of this story is that somehow he and maybe some of the other people in the halfway house got a hold of some marijuana and they all sat around and smoked it. Another way to tell this story is that the persons living at the halfway house, maybe under the order or direction of somebody else, held this man down and forced him to smoke marijuana. What we do know, however he ingested it, whether willingly or unwillingly, we know that he ingested it because the next day the probation officer shows up and says, guess what, sir? We're going to need you to take a pee test. Well, guess what? When they find THC in his system, that is a parole violation. So he goes from prison to halfway house, gets stoned, takes the pee test, right back in jail. Got him. Yeah, he was out. I think he was out like maybe 24, 36 hours at this halfway house. So whether they set him up or whether he chose to violate his parole, that's up for debate. But what we do know, and I take great satisfaction in this, you know me, I like to try to play it by the rules as much as possible. But if they held this guy down and made him smoke some weed, and especially if like the warden or the sheriff or somebody said, or the prosecutor, and you know, made that happen, I don't feel bad about it. I mean, nobody's going to feel bad about it. In fact, I get a lot of joy out of that.
Yeah. So he nothing goes, but hatred towards this vampire.
So he goes back to prison. And then in 2002, so that's all going on in 96. In 2002, this happens. And most of this is from the Florida Today newspaper. So shortly after midnight on November 30th, 2002, John Crutchley's cellmate at the Hardy Correctional Institution found Crutchley dead. He was wearing only boxer shorts, which were partially removed, and he had a plastic bread bag over his face being held in place with a red rubber band. Inside the bag was an asthma inhaler wrapped in a handkerchief. After an autopsy, the medical examiner, his name is Steven Nelson, ruled the death accidental, but due to asphyxiation while performing a sex act on himself. So John Crutchley's...
Wait, so he, in a way, flicky-flickied himself to death?
It's a autoerotic asphyxiation. Is how he died. And so ultimately John Crutchley's quest for the ultimate sexual experience kept him searching for something more forbidden, something more bizarre, We know that during the mid-80s, he gained notoriety worldwide as the vampire rapist after he kidnapped a California woman and holding her in his Malibu home for 2 days before she escaped. Sentenced to 25 years in prison for the rape and kidnapping, then gets life for violating his probation. But we see here John Crutchley's dangerous habits did not stop. Even after all of that punishment, after all of those reasons, after getting caught. So 17 years after his arrest, his dangerous habits, his quest for the ultimate sexual experience is what ultimately killed him. The prosecutor,
yeah,
Wolfinger, told the newspaper, quote, his appetite for the bizarre just continued. One thing led to another until it finally killed him. He was the ultimate sex fiend. He was the most bizarre defendant by far I ever prosecuted. As much as I hate for anyone to die, society is better off with him gone. He was always looking for something more forbidden, more bizarre. He finally found it, and the world is better for it. Now, the Corrections Department report indicates that Crutchley's interest in unusual and risky sex was well documented throughout his time while he was locked up. On record, we have Wesley Pope, who was Crutchley's cellmate from November 2000 to March 2001.
Uh-huh.
He told investigators that he saw Crutchley do such things as inject his genitals with needles and choke himself while masturbating. Crutchley's most recent cellmate, James Elders, he had to write an affidavit, and this was from a March 30th affidavit. He said that when he found John Crutchley, he thought that Crutchley was asleep when he discovered the body.
Mm-hmm.
He says when Crutchley didn't respond to calls and knocks on his bunk, Elders looked closely. He saw the bag over Crutchley's face. He yanked it off, and then he called the guards for help. Investigators, after the death, searching through Crutchley's cell, recovered a number of items that appeared to be related to his unusual behavior. And these items were plastic gloves, razors, strings with nooses, electrical wires, black tubing, and a battery pack.
Maybe I just have a morbid curiosity, but there's two truths that three truths that I'd really like to know in the story of the Florida vampire. One, what was his childhood really like? Was this somebody that was just born a sex psycho, or did something happen to him? Two, what was in the bag? And then three, I think the obvious question is, who were his victims?
Exactly. And the thing here is, Captain, you say you're curious about his childhood, but I mean, we have two, he wasn't the only child.
Right.
So it's reasonable to make a little bit of an assumption here that at least two other kids and his older sister, who passed away at 13 before he was born, would have experienced a similar childhood or upbringing by the two parents. So with some of these guys too, I don't know. Look, at the end of the day, one thing that we know to be factual is that almost all of these guys were either abused at some point in their life, or right, at least claimed to have been abused.
Hurt people.
Correct. But what I'm getting at is, if he didn't start doing what he was doing until his 30s or his 20s, I mean, there was a period of his life that he lived on his own without mom and dad. And who knows how wild and weird this dude got during that time period. And as said, there's no reason to believe that his brother or sister did any of this type of behavior as well. So it's what I'm saying. That's a long way of saying it's a blessing that these types of people are unique, and unique in not a good way.
Right. I'd love to have that interview with his sibling.
So how many other victims were there truly? We talked about that list earlier that had 26 potential victims on there. We know he's not responsible for a couple of them. And Maryland police going on record saying, we don't have anything to connect him to any of the cases we have here. We think that we actually have reason to believe he wasn't involved in any of those. We do know, and I think that even though the plea deal didn't happen, I think that we can put a lot of weight into his defense attorney going on record multiple times saying, my client was willing to confess to 3 to possibly 6 murders.
Yeah.
And then I think we also have evidence that is very suggestive that he was probably responsible not just for one murder, but probably a few, probably several, right? I think that there are two victims that seem to be an obvious choice when looking at this list of victims and saying we can connect him to these ladies as the perpetrator of their murder. So if you start in Florida, there are probably several that he's good for there, but some of these victims unfortunately remain unidentified. So we have no known social circles for the victim, no timeline to look at, and no known point of origin for when killer encountered the victim. So without any of that information, and as long as those victims remain unidentified, I don't think that with any level of confidence you could include them or exclude them as possible Crutchley victims. It would be... to me, it would just wouldn't even make any sense to have a lengthy discussion about them, because they've, with not knowing their identity, if you identify one of them or all of them, you very likely could find a much better suspect right away.
Right.
The ones that I feel very confident in here, Captain, is Patty Lou Valinsky. She's one that I feel that we can put the old 99% certainty tag on. That she's a John Crutchley victim. If you want to learn more about her case, you can visit our friends at the Charlie Project. That's charlieproject.org. They are, I believe, one to be possibly the most comprehensive missing persons database in the world, maybe in the world. She is missing. So she was hitchhiking in Florida. And what makes him a great suspect? She's the one that they found her state ID in his possession at his office when they searched his office on December 20th, 1985. We know that he kept the identification of his rape victim. So it would make sense that when you find, when she goes missing and has been missing for months, and she was missing for about 8 months by the time they find her identification and the possession of this very violent, dangerous man. And so I don't think that that's any coincidence at all. And in fact, later Crutchley would go on record and say, yeah, I picked her up. I don't deny picking up, because he can't deny everything. He has to make up a plausible story as to why he would have that identification card, but not be responsible for why she has never returned home.
Right.
And his response is, I picked her up. We drove around for a little bit. We smoked a joint. She started getting really obnoxious, talking about biker gangs and wanting to find drugs. And so he says he kicked her out of the car. And then later, I believe he says the next day, he found some of her belongings in the backseat of his car. And he chose to discard all of them, minus the identification card and the pictures, the wallet insert that they found.
I don't believe anything this guy says.
He admits to seeing her. Now, I'm sure there's at least one person out there in listener land that's saying, well, maybe she just took off on her own. And her mother says, look, my daughter, Patty, yeah, she might go away, take off for a week, couple weeks. She was also known to go out of town and out of state without telling me. She was very close with her mother. Her mother does say, if we had plans, she would tell me why she wasn't going to make those plans. Or if we had plans, she would be there. And when she started missing some of those plans, of course, her mother became very concerned. But Patty collected a monthly disability check And when the check came and her daughter didn't show up to collect it, that's when she said she knew something terrible had happened to her daughter. So I think that to me is good enough evidence to prove that she's not just, she didn't just simply walk away. The other person that I think is an obvious connection to Crutchley is Deborah Rita Fitzjohn up from Virginia. Remember, it's confirmed that everybody believes that John Crutchley was the last person to see Deborah Fitzjohn. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, for your investigation purposes, she's not a missing person anymore. They found her body 8 or 9 months later after her disappearance. She was found decomposed by hunters in a remote wooded area. And again, we have other persons saying that she was going to see John Crutchley that night. They had dated. They had gone on several dates. And he was actually, before he even moved to Florida, he was the number one suspect in that murder case. They had actively talked to Crutchley multiple times about Deborah Fitzjohn's murder. And in fact, he admits she came over to my trailer that night. When she got there, we hung out briefly. I fell asleep watching TV. When I woke up, she was putting on her coat to leave. And then he says, I never saw her again. The interesting thing here,
and nobody else saw her again.
As far as we know, yeah, there's nobody coming forward to say that she was ever seen again. Her car was later found about a mile walk from Crutchley's trailer. And it was found at a place called the Hunter's Lodge, which was a country music dance club. And they interviewed all the workers there, and every one of them saying, yeah, that car that belonged to that woman, we know who she is. She wasn't here last night. Her car was only, it was found the day after she was missing. So they didn't, not a whole lot of time passed between the time that she is believed to have disappeared and when they found her car. One thing here too, that he does in this move, Captain, is this was about a week, actually a little more than a week after Deborah Fitzjohn's disappearance. A letter arrived at Fitzjohn's condominium, and it was from John Crutchley. It was postmarked February 4th. So this would be 8 days after she vanished. And in this letter, Crutchley apologized for his sleepiness the night of Fitzjohn's visit to his trailer, saying, when you get back, please call me. I don't know you very well, but in spite of your want for a new job and all, I know it's not like you to stay away for long. I like you a lot. I know that my Libra possessiveness is an affront to your Gemini want for freedom, but I really want to be your friend. At least answer my call or drop me a card. I promise not to bother you with calls at weird times like you get from that other guy. Please call. Love, John. Sounds like a lame attempt at an alibi to me.
Bingo.
And we do know in that case, Captain, that at least on two occasions, Crutchley was talked to by authorities and talked into taking a polygraph examination twice. Both times he was a no-show.
Surprise, surprise.
Well, when police made a quick connection to this unsolved homicide up in Virginia back from 1978, the Fitzjohn's case, police in Florida made a very quick connection, because when they're searching his home after the woman was saved crawling on the side of the road, one of the items that they find is a business card, a calling card for the detective who was running that investigation up in Virginia.
Right.
And then if you want to take it a step further, this dude, according, and I know that not everybody likes a jailhouse snitch, but this dude, if this is true, he seems to not been able to keep his mouth quiet while he's locked up, because he tells at least one individual about a couple of murders that he said he did. And in fact, it goes into detail with what's believed to be his explanation of killing Debbie up in Virginia. He said that this inmate, his name is Patrick Dontell. He says that Crutchley told him that, quote, he had sex, that they had sex, and that he had taken the body out and disposed of it in the woods. We do know that she was found in the woods. He said that she was one of those kinky girls that liked to be strangled until she came to and then strangled again. He said, unfortunately, she didn't make it to the end. This cellmate kept a journal, and I'm guessing that police were able to learn quite a bit about Crutchley from this journal. Again, there's several of the victims that were found. As said, there were multiple victims that were found within a 6-mile radius of John Crutchley's home. They were all found in the year 1985. He was only locked up for 10 of those 365 days. So I think it would be reasonable to believe that there's a possibility that you could connect them to one, two, maybe all of those homicides that still remain unsolved to this very day. And we have his attorney, the attorney who defended Crutchley during his 1986 trial, who said in 1995, this man's name's Joe Mitchell, said, based upon all of the information presented to me while I was representing John Crutchley, it was obvious to me that he was involved in a number of homicides. That's coming from his defense attorney. That's almost like a mother, right? That where her boy could do no wrong, opening up and coming forward and saying, yeah, I think my son's a serial killer. I do, before we wrap up here, Captain, I want to give a shout out to the Florida Today newspaper. It took a lot of source material to put together this story, especially once you factor in last week's episodes that were in a way part one and two of this lengthy story.
Right.
But Florida Today and a really good writer for Florida Today and True Journo, Michael Cabbage, did absolutely gangbusters work on a 4-part series called Missing Proof that ran in the Florida Today paper back in October of 1995. In the end, this bizarre man and his bizarre death left so many with a lot of unanswered questions. There are detectives that think that they failed to solve these cases. There are mothers that don't know what happened to their daughters. There was an entire state that was terrified that this monster would be allowed to live and walk free after a relatively short prison sentence. And a judge that made sure that a dangerous man who needed to be monitored if he couldn't be locked up, that he would remain on probation for the rest of his days. Despite mountains of suspicion and circumstantial evidence, during his lifetime, detectives were unable to find sufficient physical evidence to indict John Crutchley for a single homicide. There are no fingerprints, no weapons, no bloodstained items that can be linked to John Crutchley. John Brennan Crutchley, the Florida vampire, remains an enigma.
You could be anywhere in the world, but you're here with us. And that's because you're a freak. Thanks for telling your friends about the show, and thanks for telling your mama and your papa. Colonel, do we have any recommended reading for the beautiful, beautiful listeners?
This week, Captain, we have one of the great ones. It's Whoever Fights Monsters, My 20 Years Tracking Serial Killers for the FBI by the late, great Robert Ressler. Face-to-face with some of America's most terrifying killers, FBI veteran and ex-Army CID Colonel Robert Ressler learned from them how to identify the unknown monsters who walk among us and put them where they belong, behind bars. Check out Whoever Fights Monsters by the great Robert Ressler. You can find that book and other recommendations on our recommended page on our website, truecrimegarage.com.
Yeah, the MFFBI. And until next week,
be good, be kind, and don't litter.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.